Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
Internet sports talk show in the world. On top of that, with all of our other radio affiliates everywhere, there really at this point is no excuse that you're not sitting somewhere listening to The Balance on Saturday morning, 9 a.m., to get your week started or to finish your week with everything that's been going on in sports. We give you a full balance of sports from racing to NBA, football, NFL, MLB, we've got it all. We've got you covered right here on The Balance. Our digits, if you want to join the conversations today, 917-889-8516. I am your host and fearless leader, El Presidente, Tom Marquis. So glad that you guys could join us on this 13th day of April. Guys, we've got a lot to talk about today. And one of the things I want to talk about, and real quickly, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time to get into a huge conversation about this, but I want to talk about the Masters because I'm a huge golf fan. I love golf. It's one of my favorite hobbies. I don't get to do it as much as I used to, and hopefully that'll change soon for me, though. But I love the Masters. To me, that's just a sign that, hey, golf is finally arrived. Usually it's in and around Easter, a little off this week. Maybe it's because of leap year, I'm not sure. But the 2013 Masters is underway in Augusta National Golf Course. I tell you what, I had a very unique once-in-a-life opportunity to play there when I was in the Army several years ago. And it actually, it was a golf outing. I was an officer at my commanding officer's daughter, ironically, had broken her leg, and he couldn't go, so I needed to fill in at the last minute. Of course, gladly I accepted. It was one of those events, you know, like we have here in Indianapolis that lead up to the 500. Obviously, didn't play with any of the pros, but the fact to be able to walk on that golf course is something special, and it really, really is a once in a lifetime opportunity. So, if you're a golf fan, guys, this is your weekend. This is your weekend. The 2013 Masters is underway at the Augusta National Golf Course there in Augusta, Georgia. And those of you that are checking everything, I was stationed at Fort Gordon, Georgia, in Augusta, Georgia. Just so you know, if you wanted to know where I was stationed at. Jason Day leading the pack with 2 under. Fred Couples with 4 under, and Jim Furyk at 3 under. And here's the other interesting story. I'm sure you've probably heard about this. If not, maybe even if you're not a golf fan, remember back when Tiger Woods actually became Tiger Woods and we got to know him and we got to really associate ourselves with Tiger Woods. Well, there's a new face, if you will, in the face of golf. And I really do wish that we had time to get into this whole story. And I'm sure that we'll talk about this next week. But 14-year, have you guys seen this kid from China? 14-year-old Ting Lang Yong. I'm sure I'm probably saying that wrong, seeing as how I've got that Western American English accent going on. Is a 14-year-old kid out there. He made the cut, and it was just really kind of cool watching him walk down the fairway there, and with a banana in his hand, and I've heard tell that he's had a juice box from his mom, and just really kind of a good ambassador. And it's good to see. And ironically enough, we talk about Tiger Woods, and it looks like he's making a comeback somewhat. But ironically enough, his hero was Tiger Woods. So that was kind of an interesting twist as well. We do want to make sure that we want to welcome all of our listeners on Indiana Talks and Live 365 and tune in across the United States. We are a national show. We're so glad that you guys have joined us this morning and so glad that you guys are a part of our show. But yeah, so you look at we'll quickly because we got to get to a break and we got to get back because Kenny Barr standing in the wings. We're going to be breaking down the fastest hour in racing. We're going to be talking some IndyCar, NASCAR. We got a very special short track guest coming at the bottom of the hour here, Mr. Josh Timmerman, good friend of ours here of the show, been on a few times, and obviously he's going to be out at Lucas Oil Raceway, so we're going to talk about that. But Tiger Woods is making a comeback, if you will, and he finished at 3 under yesterday, and I think he's got his life back together. I'm a guy that firmly believes in second chances. What are your thoughts about Tiger Woods? And he's got that skier girlfriend for the life of me that her name escapes him, but it was the girl that was in that bad skiing accident, you know, you heard her screaming down the slope and so forth. But actually, I think somebody told her in her headset that Tiger Woods was spotted out at a nightclub with a porn star. I'm not sure. I think that was the screaming that we heard. On that note, guys, we gotta take a break. We'll be right back. Again, my digits are 917-889-8516. And that girl's name is Lindsay Vaughn. Thanks to Michelle, my never-ending producer who's on top of it. She's always tries to stay a few steps ahead of me, but you know I'm hard to keep up with. Guys, I'm going to take a break. We'll be right back with Kenny Barr from Radio Speed Talk. Going to be breaking down all the racing action.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan. The Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
199 left, and baby, it all comes down to this.
Your talk show for NASCAR.
Yeah, now that's what I'm talking about.
The Balance Online.
All right, my minions, welcome back. That's right. We do want to go fast because I tell you what, we have this is one of my favorite parts of the show right here every week when we're joined by the guys from Radio Speed Talk, Cliff Tanner or Kenny Barr, and our special racing guests that we have from time to time to break down racing. Racing is one of my favorite sports to cover, and we're getting into the full swing of it as well. And speaking of swingy, the swinginest guy around, Mr. Kenny Barr of Radio Speed Talk, who still joins us from the basement of his mom's home. How you doing, sir?
Never had a house with a basement, brother. Nice try, though.
Hey, are you much of a golf fan?
Oh, Lord, no. I got way too much to do than take a little stick and beat the hell out of a white ball and then go chase it to go whack it again. I've never been a golf fan at all. I have a friend of mine who's a Class A club builder who's built clubs for many famous people right here in my hometown. But never have picked up the game at all.
Oh, wow. Well, I'll tell you what, you need to do that. It's very relaxing. I don't know how relaxing it is for Tiger Woods, though, right now. I just got this breaking news here real quickly here. We got $2 bills out here to do the breaking news. But this is because we are on topic on this. The Masters officials are reviewing if Tiger Woods took an illegal drop on the 15th hole in the second round, which could mean that he has a possible disqualification. Wah, wah, wah. We just got done talking. I just got done giving the boy his props. I just got done saying, now, a guy like Tiger Woods, come on, guys. A guy like Tiger Woods taking an illegal drop on the 15th hole. Now, you know what? You might even say that could happen to anybody. It might could happen to that 14-year-old Chinese kid, Nguyen Wan. I can't say his name. I'm sorry.
But win one now.
Yeah. One now. No, we'll just, but it might happen to him. But for Tiger Woods, for it to happen to him, that's certainly a conversation later on in the show certainly something we'll keep an eye on. And keep up with us on the social media. We'll keep you updated on that. Let's hope that doesn't happen, because if that happens, well, let's just say we're going to be talking about Tiger Woods for the next years and years and years to come. Tiger Woods, that's not the kind of mistake that Tiger Woods would make. Well, let's move on. Let's move on to the point of hand, and you're joining us here today to talk some racing. We're going to do that, and I know that you're back on the short track at Lucas Oil Raceway. We're going to talk about that. Josh Timmerman joining us, one of the drivers out there at Lucas Oil Raceway this weekend, so we're going to talk with him at the bottom of the hour. But we certainly want to get in to some NASCAR and IndyCar talk. Did you tell me that you had missed that race out there in Alabama last week?
Yeah. I have read quite a bit about it, but I did miss the race. Yeah, I had other commitments and did not have time to sit down in front of the television and eyeball that.
Yeah,
it turned out to be a strategy race. I know that.
I can't give you too hard of a time. We were actually covering the Indianapolis Indians game out at Victory Field, and so we taped it, and so I did watch part of it when I got back. But I finished listening to the end of it on the radio. But did you happen to see? And maybe you saw the highlights of it. Did you happen to see Hinchcliffe? Just hang out in his car there while they were waiting to get him out. He got out and he just stretched. And said, oh, he interrupted my nap. Did you see
that? Yeah, I did. Yeah, and Dale Earnhardt did that many years ago at Talladega. He actually fell asleep in the car before the race started and stuff. I think that's really good for a racer. He's not all wired up. He's not too keyed up. He's calm. He's level-headed. He knows what's ahead of him and stuff, and there's no sense in being nervous or worried or scared. I think that's an earmark of a really good racer, that you can stay calm in the face of going 200 mile an hour here in a couple of minutes. I would like my driver to be that way, at least at the start of a race. You know, you don't need the adrenaline flowing when you get out of bed in the morning. You know, so I'm kind of impressed by that, actually.
Well, as I am too, I agree with you as well on that. I do want to really talk about some of the keynotes, and we don't have a lot of time, so I just want to zip through these. I want to talk about some of the keynotes of IndyCar and what's kind of going on there with IndyCar. Dario Franchitti is off to the worst start of his Izod IndyCar Series career. After two races, he's last in points. And among the 26 drivers who last appointed to say among the 26 drivers who have participated, the four-time series champion and three times Indianapolis 500 winner has even fewer points than AJ Allmendinger, who finished 19th in his only race. What is going on with Franchitti?
Well, why is he last in points? What happened to in the first two races. Were they his fault, mechanical problems? I think a lot of people make way too much of a guy's start in a season. I mean, obviously, you want to start strong. You want to start up front and in the top of the heap. But it's just like, you know, baseball season. It's a long season. I see these people analyze things after the first week of something that goes until October, and they're just going absolutely crazy. If you had a bad couple of races, you're going to have a bad couple of races during the course of the season. If you had them first right out of the gate, then you got to right the ship and just keep going forward and stuff. I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with Frankie, and he'll right the ship. One of the big names last year were having an awful season until they hit Indianapolis. And then the oval tracks, and they hit their stride and started doing rather well and ended up being a factor at the end of the year. And I'm not sure if it was Dario or who it was, but somebody went through this similar start last year, and we had the same conversation last year about, and I can't remember who it was, forgive me for that, but I remember this pretty distinctly because they were going, oh, he's washed up, he's not going to be any factor this year, and people overanalyze that whole thing. I don't know why Franchini's down like he is, but I bet you if we sit back and look at it, there'll be a couple factors. There'll be some mechanical problems, just some bad racing luck, and then probably the fact that really pretty girl isn't following him around has probably got a little to do with it. I mean, look what pretty girls have done for Tiger Woods, you know?
Absolutely. Well, you know, hey, he's a single man now. He's a bachelor on the prowl. Now, Barbara, out in Alabama, he did have mechanical failure after 42 laps. And, you know, certainly that may have something to do with it. I'm certainly not trying to imply that Franchitti is washed up. But, you know, combined with Chip Ganassi and being Dario Franchitti, to me, it looks to me like that's the car they take care of. And that's the car that you don't see those kind of problems happen to Dario Franchitti, I guess is what I'm trying to say is I think there was an exhaust issue or something thinking back from last week, but go ahead there, Kenny.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately it happens to everybody, you know, and I sit here and I think of the Andy Granatelli turbo cars, you know, and I think it was Jimmy Clark that was out front by about 6 laps or whatever. It's a little exaggerant, and lost the $6 bearing on lap 197. And you know that car was prepared with a fine-tooth comb, especially under the microscope it was in for those 2 years and stuff. So just quirky things happen. Nothing anybody can really do about it. Franchitti would be perfectly fine. He's an awfully good racer, and he had some great things to say about Pocono and the testing that they did this week over there with the new surface. He's actually the only guy that's ever been on that track in that whole group of guys that practiced the other day over in the Long Pond, Pennsylvania, Pocono Speedway that they're going to race at in July or so. So that'd be perfectly fine.
I believe it is in July. Now, let's shift gears just a little bit here on IndyCar. And I want to talk about the Indianapolis 500. Obviously, we're getting geared up here in Indianapolis, and we're going to be covering it in quite extensively here on the Balance Radio Network. And we're going to be, guys, you know, just to let you know, we're going to be giving live reports from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway 2 times a day, and it'll be available on all of our various different affiliates, as well as IndianMay.com. Guys, check that out, www.IndianMay.com, a site dedicated to the Indianapolis 500 IndyCar and everything going on around there. It's another one of our sites that we have here, and all of our sound bites, interviews, video interviews, everything that we've got going on at the IMS Motor Speedway will be out in Indianapolis. Now, Kenny, every year I don't know if you do, but we hype up the car count thing, and every year it's a non-issue. You know, here's the thing. You like to bet these root beers and stuff. Would you like to make a little root beer wager? I'll buy you a root beer for the entire night if there aren't 34 drivers competing by qualification weekend. If I win, you buy me my
a
beverage of choice.
Well,
go ahead, sir.
I can probably handle that, but so you want me to tell you that there's not going to be enough cars to make the show or make the full field?
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is we put a lot of hype on the 34 drivers. how much of it's hype? How much of it do we really care about?
Well, tradition cares about it a lot. So, a lot. Me as a race fan, I don't care if they start 30 or 31 or 32 or 33 or 34. It doesn't make me a whole heck of a lot of difference. There'll be enough cars to field a full field of 33 cars. There's three or four backup cars. AJ just signed that young kid, Daly's kid, Connor Daly. Boom Boom just got him a ride with Chip Ganassi this week. And those seats are filling in, and those are both one-off Indy rides. They'll be fine. I think they make too much. Gives us something to talk about on a slow news day, but I think they make a little bit of ado about nothing there with car counts.
Well, absolutely. You know, occasionally, if this May stands up to tradition, speaking of tradition, and we'll have a few little rain days where there will be some slow days where we got to come up with things to talk about, and that'll be one of them. Another person got a brand new rider. We talked about this on the show earlier in the season with you guys. Indianapolis 500 has confirmed a ride for Ryan Briscoe. Ryan Briscoe, welcome back to Indianapolis. Team Penske driver Ryan Briscoe celebrates. I think it was Penske that he'll be driving for. No, Chip Ganassi. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I apologize for that. It was. He's been with Penske in the past. My fault on that. But Ryan Briscoe is coming back to the Indianapolis 500. I like Ryan. Good guy. So he'll be driving for the Chip Ganassi organization. And like I said, I apologize, I had that backwards. He wasn't retained by Ganassi following the 2005 season that ended with a serious crash up there in Chicagoland, obviously. And Ganassi switched from Toyota, which backed Briscoe, to Honda for 2006. But Briscoe has kind of been on that Lone Ranger trail for a while. It's a good thing that his Kemosabe or whatever has picked him up. Thoughts, Ryan Briscoe, welcome back to the Indianapolis 500.
Well, I think it's great. You know, you get anybody with an Indy experience, excuse me, and ran for the Penske organization has got to have some extra insight that will help you and your team. And Ganassi's no slouch, you know. It's not like he's hitting a second or third tier team or a one-off deal kind of thing. So that's an interesting story that'll be fun to follow. Be a lot more fun to follow that than how many guys are going to start the race, that's for sure. And I'm always kind of I lean toward the people and the personalities in racing more than I do the numbers of cars and who won and points and that kind of stuff. Although I enjoy all that, but I really like the people side of the whole racing industry, and it's really where my heart lies to a certain degree. But yeah, it's going to be fun to watch him and see how he molds with his teammates and see how well he progresses through the month of May.
Now, one final question. We'll switch over to NASCAR, and we're standing by for Josh Timmerman to join us as well. But, you know, I was, like I said, I did tape that race out there in Alabama and you know, the road course. Maybe part of this is because of the road course, but I even noticed this here in Indianapolis. I want to know how big of an issue this is. I think IndyCar has a major problem with unreadable numbers. And if you watch it, especially on the high def, I mean, the big screen, you very seldom can make out the car numbers while they were at top speed under a green flag. And to me, anyway, this is a bad situation for new race fans that really don't know who's driving what. You know, one thing about NASCAR, you know, Jeff Gordon's in the 24 car, Denny Hamlin's in the 11 car, and so forth. You know your car driver by the car number. I think this is a bad situation, especially for new race fans, which is how this all ties in, because IndyCar is really struggling to get those new fans. And obviously they're hoping for the shot in the arm of these young drivers like Hinchcliffe and some of the other young drivers to come up and make their name. You know, a lot of fans, you look at Target's car, they're all the same, but they're different. They're all the same, but they're different. I'm just wondering how big of an issue is this? Is this an issue that IndyCar is going to have to address if they want to increase their fan base, especially new fans that they're trying to get?
Well, it wouldn't hurt, but the problem is they don't have a big, nice, flat panel to put a big, fat number on the thing.
That's
so
true.
What people do, and I do the same thing, if I'm watching it on TV and I happen to be walking through the room and I glance at it and I see a Target car, I know it's one of the Target drivers, but I can't tell you which one. I recognize them by their paint schemes or their sponsors or whatever, and then I'll have to slow down and figure out who it is for sure. But, yeah, that, I've always kind of had that same – that's funny you bring that up, because I've always had that same thought about, gosh, you know, if I take a friend to the racetrack and he's never been there before, how can I tell him it's Will Power, or how is he going to know that it's Dario Franchini or whoever when you got two or three cars painted the same way and stuff. We just have to, I guess, overwhelm them with other fun facts about Indianapolis. And if you take them to the big show first, that facility is just absolutely awesome. You know, it's like walking into Wrigley Field if you're a baseball fan, or Fenway Park, or Chicago Stadium, the old Chicago Stadium when the Bulls played, or anything like that. It's just, you just get this, there doesn't even have to be a car on the track, and you just get this wow factor because it's so, so cool. So if you ever want to take an Indy fan anywhere, if you want to introduce them to Indy car racing, if you can, and I know this is a national show now, if you're listening out in California, figure out a way to get to Indianapolis, because it's just absolutely the mecca of IndyCar racing, and it's the coolest racing facility in the world by far.
Oh, absolutely. And I still to this day, and I live just a few miles away, and I have the ability through media credentials to get in and out of traffic and not have to deal with a lot of stuff. But I tell you what, when we get here, get into Turn 3 or get in your stands and spend the weekend here in Indianapolis. And again, we'll have all of the information on how to do that on IndianMay.com. Check that out. We'll have that up on our websites and stuff as well. And you know, real quickly, talking about being able to recognize the cars with the drivers, you know, I'll admit, when I first started covering racing, especially IndyCar, I had a hard time knowing who's who and what, and I'd be standing next to other media people, and I'd say, who's that? Who's that? Who's that? You know, of course I knew who Dario Franchitti and your Andretti's and those guys are, you know, but there are a lot of young drivers that maybe you don't know who they are. And we have the ability to be up close to these drivers and be able to do this that the regular fan doesn't, but on their fire suit, usually on the right side or the left side, is their name. That was pointed out to me by a media veteran. And I won't give his name because everybody knows who he is. But he says, if you ever want to know who it is, just look at their fire suit. Their name's on there. So there you go. That's how – you know, us media people really don't know them all. We just look at the fire suits. Oh, hey, Ryan, come here. Can we get a few words with you?
Yeah, well, you know, you're giving away some secrets. We're supposed to baffle them.
That's true.
You know, dazzle them with brilliance.
That's true. You know our producer, Michelle Jones, she actually every day at lunch, she needs to just get away from the office and stuff. And she always goes down to right across the street from the track and eats her lunch there. And so she's always there at the track every day. So just to tell you what a special place that is here in Indianapolis. And I think everybody has special memories, especially if you live here in Indianapolis as we do. Well, we're going to take a break because when we get back, we want to get in, and I wanted to get into some NASCAR talk, and hopefully we can do that. Obviously, the guys are out at Texas. Six shooting Texas. Nowhere else can you win a race. You think this year and all the – I don't want to turn this political, but do you think this year they'll still give them the six shooters in victory lane?
In Texas, absolutely they will. No doubt about it. Isn't any NRA sponsoring a race down there this year, too, down in Texas?
I think so. I think so.
Yeah, I think they are. It's the only state in the union to probably get away with it right now, but I think you'd be perfectly fine down in Texas.
It's going to be a good race. Hopefully we got some time. We'll mix it up between the short track and NASCAR. We'll try to get it all in. But we're going to take a break because when we get back, we're going to have Josh Timmerman, one of our favorite short track drivers, on, going to be talking with us about that race that you are also going to be out there at Lucas Oil Raceway. Guys, we'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Thank you. 33 under my feet. Nothing on this wide rock but a little old me. I got 2 miles till he makes bail. And if I'm
Fastlane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fastlane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
My daddy left us. I was only 6 months older than you are now.
I don't remember him. You will remember me.
Jackie Robinson, a black man in white baseball.
I want you to know I'm there for you.
In my heart.
Think about the abuse that he's going to take.
Your enemy will be out in force, but you cannot meet him on his own low ground.
What you going to do if one of these pictures goes through your head?
I'll duck.
Mark my words and circle this day. Negroes are going to run the white man straight out of baseball.
This ain't the America I know. You hear me?
Same with you. They would be ashamed.
If Robinson can help us win, then he is going to play on this ball club.
You don't belong here, and you never will.
Get off the field.
Brooklyn Dodgers ain't changing our way of living.
Where are we now?
You are not the only one with something at stake here.
You want a player who doesn't have the guts to fight back?
No. I want a player who's got the guts not to fight back.
Give me a uniform. Give me a number on my back. I'll give you the guts.
I father, I Brooklyn Dodger them. I jack, I rob, I spin. Oh man, I'm Jackie Robinson. Except when I run base, I dodge the pen.
I'm just a ball player.
You a hero.
Why don't you look in the mirror? This is a white man's game.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm right here.
I'm a Brooklyn boy. I may take some getting used to.
Maybe tomorrow we'll all wear 42.
Welcome back to The Balance. My name is Tom Mark Wiesel, Presidente, your fearless host. And I tell you what, we're having a great time talking with Kenny Barr. A little bit about IndyCar. I wish we had some time to get into NASCAR. We'll probably try to feed that into the next half hour here and thread it in and out. But we've got one of our favorite guests joining us as well. And Mr. Kenny Barr is back, too. So joining us now... is Mr. Josh Timmerman. Josh, how are you doing, sir? I always mess up your car number. So it's the 09, right? The 09 car.
Yeah.
I used to always say 9 car, then you corrected me on that. So I always say now I say the 09 car because I know that O is absolutely important. Josh Timmerman joining us, and Mr. Kenny Barr is joining us. Guys, I know you both are going to be out at Lucas Oil Raceway. I'm going to try my best to get out there this weekend. That may not happen, but I'm certainly going to catch Josh as things move along. The oval track comes back to life. Out at Lucas Oil Raceway beginning tomorrow with the third annual Cabin Fever Championships presented by CRA. Four great divisions. You've got the late model super sportsmen, the modifieds, the street stocks, the compacts, and And they really put on a show that you don't want to miss. I think the gates open up at 11, and we'll have all that information up on our website and our social media. Michelle, get all that taken care of. And if you got kids under 5, they're free, and all the prices and stuff will be on there. I think qualifying begins at 12:30, and racing begins at 2:30. So we'll start with you, Mr. Josh. Josh, welcome back to the Ballots, and your season's underway. Talk with us a little bit about how things are going with you so far this year.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, first of all. Well, you know, we're really excited. Finally, it's been about 6 months, I guess, since the last race, and our whole team has really done a 180 as far as equipment and everything goes. So we had some big help over the winter. Got some help coming to the racetrack with us tomorrow, and tested in Fort Wayne yesterday, or not yesterday, but last Saturday, and we were really, really good. So we're excited, and I think we've got a legit shot to make some noise this year.
Well, we're joined by Josh Timmerman, and also Mr. Kenny Barr of Radio Speed Talk. Now, Kenny, I know you're going to be out there doing some media work, and are you going to be on the public address system there as well?
Yeah, I'm doing double duty tomorrow. I'm also going to be crewing one of the late model sportsman cars. In between PA work, I'm going to be calling the action for the Top Speed Modified Tour, actually all season long, with the exception of a couple of races that I can't make due to weddings and prior commitments. But I'll be doing double duty and maybe triple, because about the time you get there and get upstairs, get a microphone in front of you, somebody else hands you something and said, hey, can you do this division while you're here? I said, well, of course, no problem. So I'll be up and down, riding that elevator back and forth a couple, three times, and see if I can't help one of the locals that I've helped for the last 4 or 5 years do well down at Indianapolis also.
Kenny, do they give you one of those special scooters or golf carts?
They sure as hell need to. They've seen how good I am. But no, because I got to run through the tunnel back and forth. So think about buying some new shoes this afternoon, to tell you the truth.
Absolutely. I really enjoy spending time out there at Lucas. And you're right, you got to walk underneath that tunnel and then walk back on the other side of the track. But it's a special track. It's a great track. Joining us also is Mr. Josh Timmerman of the 09 Car Guys. Last year, Josh was nominated for the 2012 Most Popular Late Model Driver from Speed51.com. And in 2010, Bearfield Speedway Late Model Rookie of the Year. So this is an up-and-coming driver, Mr. Josh Timmerman. Josh, anything you want to tell us new about your new sponsorships or anything that's going on with your sponsorships? We just certainly don't want to leave those out.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple things I wanted to talk about today. We've actually got a new name for the race car, which a couple people wanted me to broadcast today. But, you know, we've one of the things that drivers and crews do from time to time is they name their race cars. So my guys have been on me to name mine for years now, but nothing really stuck. So we put a little blurb out on Facebook and Twitter and had a lot of responses, and we came up with the name Dorothy. That's the name of our race car this year. And the reason why we came up with that, Dorothy was the name of my grandmother, who I was unable to meet. She passed away before I was alive. But there's a couple reasons why we picked that, and it really aligns with our goals for this year. You know, she was very strong. She had the ability to do anything, and more importantly, she didn't take no crap from anybody. So that's kind of why we picked with that. And you know, I think we're gonna have a great year this year. You know, our goals are to finish every race, to lead laps, win races, and hopefully compete for a championship this year. So we're really excited. Other than that, you know, I over the off season, I became a partner with the Big Brothers Big Sisters of Central Indiana, and I've got a match. His name is Alex. He's 10. He lives in Noblesville. He's a great kid. So I wanted to kind of give a little plug to Big Brothers Big Sisters. There are over 300 kids in Central Indiana that are looking for some sort of mentor, whether it be guys, girls, or a couple. So I just wanted to give a plug for that. You know, it's been great. It's always good to, you know, keep yourself involved in things like that, because it keeps you humbled and it keeps you keeps you driven and things like that. So I always like to give back. So, you know, for more information, I guess you could look at BeBigForKids.com. So definitely just wanted to give a plug for that today.
And I'll tell you what, Josh, and this is one thing I know very personal about you. You absolutely give back, and you really, you know, a lot of drivers, and not that you're going to turn down the big sponsorship money, but a lot of drivers really focus and forget about, you know, a lot of those not-for-profit organizations, and you care a lot about, obviously, you just mentioned Big Brothers and Big Sisters, and one of your huge sponsors have been your sponsor for a while. It's Families for Hope, and that has a very personal story for you as well. So, you know, Families for Hope and Big Brothers and Big Sisters organization, we commend you and applaud you for that. I know you got a new paint scheme. You kind of look like the Batmobile out there now.
Yeah, we, you know, since we bought this car, we've always had a white body. But this year, we're all black. So it's a black chassis, black interior, black body. And, you know, we've got a lot of help this year from Terry Fisher and Terry Fisher's senior up and junior up in Fort Wayne. And man, they did such a great job. The car is awesome. So, it's going to be all black this year. We're excited. Like I said, we tested in Fort Wayne last weekend and I don't think it could have went any better. So, they're coming down to crew for us tomorrow. TJ is going to be our crew chief, and you know, we're going to try to park it in Victory Lane.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Your faith is very important to you, and I know you've got a little slogan that's attached to your stuff there, and that's "Be strong and be courageous," Joshua 1:9. And you know, we're a faith-based show as well. So, you know, if you're anything like the stories in Joshua, you're gonna do just fine. Absolutely. Now, I know you've got a great and exciting season, and with the black car and everything black, maybe we should have. And if I had known all of this ahead of time, I would have had it ready to go. We would just be playing Ring of Fire in the background there. But all right, Kenny Barr, do you have any questions here for Josh Timmerman of the 09 car?
No, yeah, I do, but it's like kind of unrelated. What did you think of the facility in Fort Wayne and the improvements they made, Josh?
Well, based on my understanding, they're really just this winter they were working on the fan side of things.
Right. That's true.
But man, their website is awesome, and I think it's still BearfieldSpeedway.net, I believe. They may have changed it, but I think that there are lots and lots of great things happening at Bearfield. You know, we hope to get up there a handful of times and race this summer. There's lots of gaps in our, you know, CRA, late model sportsman schedule to do that. So we want to get up there and race a few times. But I'm excited for the next 3 or 4 years up there. And you know, I know that they brought in a big outlaw race for this summer. So, you know, I think that I hope and I think that Bearfield Speedway is going to start thriving again.
Yeah, I do too. They did change the website address just recently. Actually, they did you dirty. It's fwrace.com.
Oh, okay.
Well, we'll go ahead, and I tell you what, because we had Josh on, but we'll go ahead and make that our short track of the week, guys, as well as Lucas Oil Raceway. So we'll have Michelle get that information on there. We don't have a lot of time to talk about those two tracks, but certainly very good tracks to be. Now, let me ask you this, Josh. What does it feel as a driver and as a challenge as a team? Obviously, you guys don't have the huge dollars behind you that you're getting there, but you don't have the huge dollars behind you, especially in a lot of these short tracks. You kind of pay as you go, and strategy is very, very important to you at each different track. As a driver, how important is Lucas Oil to race there? Lucas Oil Raceway, the history behind that, everything that's associated with that track. Obviously, you're just close enough to almost see the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, just right down the road from them. How special is that for you as a young driver to drive there at a track like Lucas Oil Raceway?
Yeah, I absolutely love Lucas Oil Raceway. It is at the top of my list for sure. You know, it's important to me because when I was growing up, when we moved to Indianapolis from Iowa, the first races that I came to were at Lucas Oil Raceway. So I got to see a lot of the NASCAR Nationwide Series races there a lot of the Truck Series races there, as well as a lot of the local races there. So our first trip to Lucas Oil Raceway was in 2008 when we were still racing in the Anderson Speedway truck division. And it was special to me because we had a family with us that their son had just passed away from the condition that Families for Hope the condition that they support. So that was special to me. You know, we went back in 2010, my first race there in this late model, and we were very, very good. I think we finished fifth out of 32 or 33 cars, and we had such a great race. So it's important to me because, you know, it's my favorite racetrack, and I think that we're good enough there that, and our car's good enough that we can really make some noise. So places like Winchester, I know that I've still got some learning to do. We need to make sure that we capitalize on the opportunity of going to Lucas Oil Raceway as well as the points. You know, like I said, we'd like to run for points this year. So it surely wouldn't hurt to start the season out with a good solid finish or even a win.
What's your strategy out there at Lucas Oil Raceway this weekend?
We're going to win. we are putting our best foot forward. We have absolutely everything we need to win. It's just going to be a matter of circumstance and kind of how things play out. But, you know, the biggest thing that I was impressed about with our car when we went to Fort Wayne to test last week was, you know, I probably ran 100 laps the whole day. And at the end of those 100 laps, we were faster than when we started. And we were on really, really old tires. So the fact that we may not always be the fastest car there, but if we're the fastest car at the end of the race, or we're the car that doesn't fall off the most, then we're going to be good. So we're pulling out all the stops, so to say, and we're going to win. And anything less would be disappointed. But you know, in the grand scheme of things, we'd be happy with a top 5 or 10. But we're going for the trophy this weekend.
Now let me ask you this: the fourth annual Cabin Fever Championships are going to be at Lucas Oil this year. They had been held at Plymouth, but I think Plymouth got converted over to a dirt track. Kenny, you might be better to answer that, but I think it got converted over to a dirt track. But two things: how important is it to you in this CRA series? Obviously, trying to get noticed. But two things: how important is it to you as a driver to win in the CRA series, as well as to win at Lucas Oil?
Yeah. Well, to win in the CRA series is certainly not an easy thing to do. There's a reason why those guys are there and traveling all across the state, you know, and even sometimes across into other states. So realistically, we're racing with the best of the best late model drivers. I know, you know, Kenny mentioned he's coming with one of his guys, and he's very good as well. I think there's going to be a lot of really good cars, and they opened up the rule book a little bit this year to invite some of the other cars from the top divisions. So what that's going to do is just make the competition a little bit higher. But, you know, it's important to win CRA because CRA is the best racing division, racing series in the Midwest, if not in the entire country. So to be able to race with the top drivers and beat them, certainly something special, and then to win it, you know, Lucas Oil, you know, that puts your name up there with all of the guys across, you know, along the years with ASA and Nationwide and Trucks and, you know, CRA that have won there over the years. Your name gets to be in that group of people, so it's definitely really important to win, and I think that's why we're going to see. I think we're going to see lots of race cars out there tomorrow, so we're really excited.
Now, we're also our other affiliate. Obviously, we're a national show now, but our other affiliate, Indiana Talks, we're live on Indiana Talks right now, and we're live all over the state of Indiana, from the north to the south, all and everywhere in between. So, guys, make that trip to Indianapolis tomorrow. It's not a long drive. The weather's not bad. I grew up in Evansville. I know you can't get there from here, but you can get here from there. you got to either take 69 69 up or 70 to 41. Anyway, it's, the racetrack is very easy to find. We've got the website up there as well. And we're joined by Josh Timmerman of the 09 car. He's joining us here on The Balance on our national broadcast and of course, all over the state of Indiana as well. So, Josh, it's a pleasure to join you and certainly get out to your local tracks as well. For you to join us, Josh. Now, and Kenny Barr from Radio Speed Talk is joining us also, who's also going to be out there doing double duties out there at Lucas Oil Raceway. What are some of the things, Kenny, that other drivers are looking at? And you're going to be – are you guys going to be competing, your driver and Josh going to be in the same race?
Yeah, we are.
Oh no! See, now don't let out any trade secrets per se, but let's just talk about the basic track strategy that your team and other teams are going to be looking at inside that oval at Lucas Oil Raceway.
Well, just like any race, you want to start up front and stay up front best you can. Tire strategy is always interesting. First of the year, everybody's got new donuts, so you don't really have to worry too much about that. Lucas Oil is infamous for having a faster high groove than it does the middle or low groove, and I think part of the key to winning there is being able to do the classic slide job. I know it's not that easy on asphalt, but if you can get into the corner a little bit harder than the other guy and slide up and still get some grip, you'll be able to make some headway and stuff. And I like Josh's theory about having the car good late and not as good early, because that's how you win these races anyway. I mean, you can be a little bit tight to start the race, and then you want to be good and balanced about halfway through when you can really need to get on the loud pedal and get after it. So qualifying is important. You want to start in the top three or four rows the best you can, because it seems like if you start in the back, always somebody gets a little bit squirrely, and then you get yourself caught up in a mess that has absolutely nothing to do. You're an innocent victim kind of thing. So starting up front's important. Getting a couple good practices in down there, and I think they only hit practice twice, and they're both 15-minute sessions. So, and you want to scuff some tires in, and experience there helps quite a bit. You know where to lift, where to get back on the gas, car balance. You get your notebook out, especially first of the year. It's going to be a reasonably cool day, so the grip's going to be a little bit better. Cool is also good for a little bit more horsepower, so the guys will have to be cognizant of that when they go diving into the corner, whether they're going to have a few more R's than they normally do or not. And experience plays a big factor in it. And Josh has been around that track enough now. He'll be okay. We'll be keeping an eye on him. You know, we're not afraid of anybody, but there's some certain cars out there that you always watch and see what they're doing. And racers are infamous for being copycats. You know, if one guy's going fast, you always want to know why and what he's got up on you. So we'll keep an eye on that old black 09, trust me.
The Batmobile, the Ring of Fire. It is going to be a good race out there at Lucas Oil. Like you see, trying to get out there at Lucas Oil Raceway, it's a great track, certainly a very legendary track, been around for a long time, under some different names, but the track has always been there. And tomorrow, fans will be treated to 150 laps of feature racing action with 40 lap features for the late model Sportsman and Street Stocks, plus 40-lap feature event for the Top Speed Modified Tour, and a 30-lap feature for the Boars Compact Tour Series. 100-plus cars are expected to compete in Sunday's races. That's a little bit more than the Indy 500, Kenny.
Just a little bit, yeah. A little more affordable, though, Tom.
Yeah, we're joined by Josh Timmerman, and Josh, I'd be remiss if I didn't give you the opportunity, as I always do when you come on this show, to talk about Families for Hope, what it is and what it means to you. Can you talk with us a little bit about Families for Hope and how people can be involved with that?
Yeah, Families for Hope is a nonprofit that was set up by Steve and Leslie Harley, and their child Sammy had what's called holoprosencephaly, and essentially what that means is the brain doesn't split into its two halves. So naturally, from the beginning, there's lots of complications, lots of problems. It's rare among, children born with, malformations and things of that nature. So they set up this network of doctors and families and things of that nature to raise awareness and create events and things of that nature for the families to do. We've been a big supporter. My mom took care of Sammy So, you know, naturally when he passed away a few years ago, when that happened, you know, we our family sort of absorbed their family and they come to the races with us, and she helps me out a lot with my website and Twitter and everything else like that. So to get involved, really, just visit www.familiesprovoke.org. There's lots of ways, lots of volunteering opportunities, you know, lots of ways to give other than financially, but those are important as well. So, yeah, we're looking forward to another year of helping them out. We appreciate all the help that they give us. So it's we're raising awareness along the way. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Well, absolutely, and we appreciate everything that you do for Families for Hope, and there's it's on the hood of your car. You can't miss it. That's for sure. Josh, I always like to ask our guests this before we let them go. Is there anything that you'd like to tell us that we haven't asked you, or anything that you'd like to tell us?
Well, I guess the only thing I would do is just give a shout out to everybody that helps. You know, again, my parents, Stephen Leslie Harley, they stepped up a little bit financially this winter, which was a big help. And then, you know, Bill and Kathy Shoemaker Performance, they do our engines, very solid engines. Fisher Fab, TJ and Terry Fisher, they are, our car is now a Fisher Fab car, through and through. So, we're really excited to have them on board. Glad they're coming down to crew for us tomorrow. And then Ellis Race Cars, you know, he helps us out with parts and things of that nature. But, you know, other than that, we're ready to rock and roll. Just got to put the stickers on it, wax it up a little bit. We're ready to go. So we're excited. I think it's going to be a long day today. tomorrow's race day, and, you know, it's been a long time coming for a lot of people. So, you know, there's a lot of excited people around here.
Well, we're excited for you, and we're glad to hear about your association and be an official Fisher Fab car. That's better than being an official Price car, let me tell you, sir. So, Kenny, do you have any final thoughts for Josh?
Fisher Price car. That was good, Tom. You,
little
you
delayed reaction there.
Help you with that, brother. That was good.
Every now and then I find one.
I want to wish Josh good luck tomorrow. We'll look him up tomorrow and say hey. We'll probably do it early before too much activity. And it's looking forward to the season. I know that Terry Fisher and the gang put together a pretty good race car, and they've been pretty competitive everywhere they go. So Josh's car, not that it was lower quality last year, but he stepped up the game a little bit. So I would again, we're going to keep an eye on the Black 09 because he's going to be one of the cars that you're going to have to beat down there in Indianapolis this year.
All right. Josh, we want to thank you so much for taking time to join us here on our broadcast today. And you're always welcome. You never need an invitation. But certainly we appreciate you taking time out of a very, very busy weekend to join us. And we look forward to following your action out there at Lucas Oil Raceway. I myself am going to try my best to get out there. It's a busy weekend for me as well. But, Josh, where can people find your work, masterpieces, stalk you, follow you, whatever you'd like for them to do?
Well, really, several different ways. JoshTimmerman.com is my website. You can get to anything from there. My blog, any of the Twitter stuff, you know, any of the Family Sprove stuff and other sponsors. You follow me there. Search me on Facebook, Josh Timmerman. I have a fan page and then Twitter at Josh Timmerman. So all of the above will be updated as we go this weekend. Be ready for updates, and hopefully we'll have good news to report.
Well, one more update that we want to know is if there's any good news in this arena. We always try to keep track of your love life. How's that going for you, sir?
He's got a nose. No one telling nothing.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, no comment.
All right, no comment. We'll let that go. Well, you know, here's the thing. He actually has an agent that's working on his behalf to get that worked out. So we always want to stay updated. Josh Timmerman of the 09 car, the Black 09 car, Families for Hope, and Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Josh, thanks so much for joining us, sir.
Hey, have a good one, guys.
All right. Great guest. I love having him on, and he's a lot of fun, Kenny. And I think you've got your hands cut out for you tomorrow when you go up against we're just going to call it the Ring of Fire card from here on out.
Well, I'll tell you, we will be quite fine.
You'll be quite fine. Would you like
yes,
some?
Yes, we will.
Would you like?
We're very confident. We've won several championships with this car and a lot of races and we made a few changes ourselves and stuff. Matter of fact, I'm ready to go. I was going to go help work on it this afternoon, and they told me, "Hey, all we got to do is load up and go." So they're ready to rock and roll.
Are you going to reveal to us who your driver and who your car is?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Steve Minnick Jr. is our driver. Won the late model championship at Bearfield a couple of years ago. Won the modified championship there. Last year, won the modified championship up at Angola 2 or 3 years ago. He's won, I think, over 150 features in his career. Black car also, number 72, Against the Wind Express Special, owned by Joe Tucker. It's actually a rather old car, but Steve Minnick Sr., who is a former NASCAR crew chief and actually grew up next to me in New Haven, and my dad was his original mentor to get it when he started when he was like 15 or 16. So Steve's like my big brother, and we're pretty thick. And Stevie Jr. is kind of like my nephew, so very good. And Steve fabricates his own shocks, builds his own front ends and stuff, and rebuilds cars all winter long after guys crash into the concrete and need front clips and rear clips put on. So that's why I asked Josh a couple of interviews ago where he took it, because I didn't know if Steve was doing his car or not, which would have been interesting.
We want to make sure that we get that out there. Now, what was the car name and number? Because we want to get it up on our social media.
It would be the car number will be number 72, driven by Steve Minnick Jr., M-I-N-I-C-H.
All right. We'll get it up there. Michelle will take care of that for you. Well, we just got just a few more minutes, then we got to go. And then Jeff Kurtz is going to be joining us on the top of the hour here. And through next hour, going to be talking about the NFL draft, his brand new book, The Slant. And also, we're going to talk a little bit about some MLB action. And going back to golf, guys, Tiger Woods, not disqualified from the Masters, assessed a 2-stroke penalty for a bad drop in the second round. So good news, Tiger Woods fans. We don't have to be talking about him getting disqualified and why. Well, NASCAR is out in Texas, sponsored by the NRA. I love it. I tell you what, I wish that we could find a way to combine a political talk show and a sports talk show, because I tell you what, I think we'd have a lot of fun. We may not have any listeners, but we'd have a lot of fun doing it. I love it. I just love Texas, and they love their guns. And one of the great things they get to do in Victory Lane is get those really nice, real nice six shooters that are just prized possessions. So real quickly, and we don't have much time to get into NASCAR, but real quickly, what are some of the things you're looking for out there? What are the X factors? What are the surprises? Obviously, the Bushes are there again.
Yeah, kind of surprising in that you got the Bush and Shrub in the front row. I'm glad to see the Furniture Row team do well. I'm not the biggest fan of Kurt Busch, but I found out that his significant other, and I don't even know if he's married or not, has a certain heart and passion for veterans like I do. So I got to back off my dislike for him a little bit, because he's in real life he's doing some of the same stuff we're doing. On a, probably a bigger scale than we're doing it and stuff. But, Dale Jr. qualified well. Yesterday's qualifying session was interesting because the cooler it got and as the track got in the shade, the track temperature came down, so the grip came up. So some of the guys who qualified early were good, and the guys who qualified late were good, and all the guys that got caught in the middle just had a little bit slicker track and stuff. So it's going to be a great race. Texas always does. Biffle, who does well down there, qualified way back in the back of the pack. Danica didn't qualify all that well. We'll see how well she does this week. And this is one of those tracks that they struggle at, the intermediate tracks and stuff. So lots and lots of sidebars. Fun to watch NASCAR every weekend.
Well, real quickly, Kenny, what's going on at Radio Speed Talk this week? You guys, the show will be heard right here on the Balance Radio Network tomorrow. But what's going on with Radio Speed Talk, and where can people find your work and masterpieces?
Well, one of the great things is we've got one of our pieces of equipment working again. So we have an exclusive interview with Eric Jones, who's a 16-year-old phenom who drove the Kyle Busch Motorsports Toyota truck to a ninth-place finish in his first NASCAR start at Martinsville. We got a good 15-20-minute interview with Eric. And then we banter around the normal stuff that we do in a very interesting segment of Did You Know? And you're going to have to tune in, Tom, because I'm not even going to give you a inkling of what it is, but it's really cool about racing history in America.
How's that for a teaser? All right, Kitty Barr, Radio Speed Talk. Kitty, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck to you out at Lucas Oil Raceway this weekend, and we'll catch up with you next week, sir.
Okay, and if you get out there, look me up, brother. I'll be somewhere. I'll have my phone with me so you can text me and find me.
Roger that, sir. We'll do that. Kitty Barr, Radio Speed Talk. Guys, we've got to take a break. Right around the corner, standing in the wings, Mr. Jeff Kurtz. Going to be talking about his new book, The Slant. Going to be talking about the NFL draft. And maybe we'll throw in a little bit of a teaser for Hot Corner. Guys, we'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
So you're not good at sports. It's a very small part of life.
Sports. Bart, Bart rides up in the front seat today because he's a good guy at sports.
Con los terroristas.
Minions, welcome back to hour number two. My name's Tom Mark, was your fearless leader and host for the next hour. Thanks for joining us in the very first hour, Mr. Kitty Barr of Radio Speed Talk, Josh Timmerman of the 09 car, late model modified CRA series driver, going to be out at Lucas Oil Raceway this weekend. Always good to talk with Josh Timmerman. And I tell you what, as we get geared up for the racing season, remember, www.indianmade.com. We're going to be out at Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the whole season out there doing interviews, both audio and video, and we'll just kind of have all kinds of fun out there. And throughout all of our affiliates, we're going to be giving updates, live updates from Indianapolis Motor Speedway two times a day to keep you up to date, to get you ready for the Indianapolis 500. And guys, there on indianmade.com, we'll have all the different ways that you guys could get here to Indianapolis. This is a national broadcast, so I know that some of you guys have got to make a good trip, but I tell you what, it is a trip that you'll never forget. Well, we're talking a little bit about the Masters as well, and Tiger Woods got himself in a little bit of a pickle. We talked a little bit at the top of the show there about there was the possibility that Tiger Woods would get disqualified. Fortunately for Tiger Woods fans and Masters fans like myself, that did not happen. He was just assessed a 2-stroke penalty for the bad drop in the second round. We want to thank all of our affiliate stations for joining us. Indiana Talks, for all across the state of Indiana, Live 365, TuneIn, just to name a few, that you can find us all over the United States from coast to coast and probably in some island in Cuba. All right, Mr. Jeff Kurtz, thank you so much for joining us today, sir. How are you doing?
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Are you much of a golf fan?
I follow it, but I gave it up because it was too frustrating, just following, picking up the ball all over the place. So I watch it from a distance now.
Well, you know what? Unfortunately, I'm a huge golf fan. I love to golf. I'm one of those guys. You know, I like to fish, too. So if there would be a way that I could combine golfing and fishing – well, there probably is, because my ball always ends up in the water. So, you know, so there probably is a way to do that, because I'm always fishing out balls of the water. But I
hear you.
I love to golf, but I really like the Masters. Like any sport, they've got their Super Bowl, and the Masters is their Super Bowl. And Tiger Woods is making a comeback, obviously, from a lot of things that's happened with him. And he's got a brand new girlfriend and all of that stuff going good with him. And then he had this issue with the ball drop, and we had thought maybe he was going to be disqualified. Turns out that's not going to be the case. But before we get to our topic at hand, have you seen that 14-year-old kid from China out there? He made the cut, and what was really cool, he was walking around with a banana and a juice box on the Masters. Did you happen to see that?
I heard about he had the early lead, and I heard that he was penalized a stroke yesterday for slow play. It's just an amazing story. I thought that his English, he was very well spoken for a young man who didn't grow up in the States and at his early age. I think just in general, the Masters is something that's probably on every sports fan's bucket list. Just the azaleas blooming and the course's natural beauty. I think it's something that if you have an opportunity, I would definitely like to go down and be part of the gallery, even if it's during a Wednesday par 3 session that they had, or even on the opening round.
Well, you know, they have those budget days where you can get in for like $800 or so.
You're right.
You know, you missed the story at the top. When I was in the Army, I had a very unique opportunity to play at a golf outing. It wasn't with any of the golf things, but it was one of those pre-things that they do, you know, kind of like here at the 500 when I was in the Army. So that was really a once-in-a-lifetime special opportunity for me to actually play on that golf course. It still gives me goosebumps to tell that story. But I tell you, we love having you on, because you're great with the NFL. There is no you might wonder why we played that NFL bumper, because there is no off season in the NFL. Absolutely not. And now we're getting geared up for the draft coming up here this next weekend. Obviously, we got the Colts. We got a lot of stuff going on in the draft. We've got the kid from Notre Dame. So what I want you to do, and I know you've got a new book out that's just coming out, and it's called the Slant Guide. And if you order it now, it can be mailed immediately to you, and the PDF is available online, and as well. And you've got a lot of stuff to help us guide us through the draft guide. So I'm going to just give you the reins real quick here. Jeff, the 2013 NFL draft is right around the corner. Give us the ups, the downs, the X factors, things we're looking for.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to put the plug in for the book. It is right off the shelf. It's been a comprehensive look at over 250 old scouting reports, over 900 players profiled in it. This year's draft is going to be much like the recent drafts in that underclassmen will really dominate. I would think you'll see probably about two-thirds of the first round be underclassmen as far as draft picks go. And as a class, as a whole, there's a lot of depth and talent at both the offensive and defensive line positions. The skill positions are a little light, pretty good crop of wide receivers, but when you look at the quarterbacks beyond Geno Smith and Matt Barkley, it's kind of a suspect group. There's some talent there, but they also have a lot of questions. Running backs, a little thin. I think this is going to be the first year in perhaps draft history. I would have to research that, but I think we will not see a running back selected in the first round. Eddie Lacy of Alabama and Wisconsin's Monty Ball are the two top prospects, along with North Carolina's Giovanni Bernard, both second-round picks. There's a team that could reach for them late in the first round, but I really think that we won't see a running back chosen in the first round. It just goes to show you the value of that position. Teams can find good backs all throughout the draft in the late rounds. As a matter of fact, Washington last year, the rookie of the year, Alfred Morris from Florida International, he was a sixth-round selection. You can go on and on. Teams find value later on. So it's real interesting in that perspective. I would say to sum it up, there is it's a deep draft. I don't think it's star-studded in that there's no one player, I think, beyond the first pick, and there's a lot of subjective comments about if it's Luke Jokel, the offensive tackle from Texas A&M, or Eric Fisher, offensive tackle from Central Michigan, on who's going to be that first pick. There's really no clear-cut decision there, and once you get beyond that, draft can fall in a lot of different ways. There's always speculation as far as teams trading. I think that what we'll see is that teams will want to trade down and accumulate more picks, and there will be a reluctance to go up top because there's not that surefire player that everybody has to have. I think Kansas City, holding the top pick, would like to deal down, but I'm not sure someone will want to go up and pay the price for moving into that top overall spot. So it's wide open. I think that makes for an interesting draft. There are a number of top prospects from around the state of Indiana. So if you look at Notre Dame, for example, Manti Te'o and Tyler Eifert, the tight end, will be Te'o is a borderline first-round pick. I do think that he's repaired his reputation enough where we'll see him selected anywhere between picks 20 to 32. So I think he's late first round. Eifert, very talented and skilled, aggressive, has good size, good frame, can get down the field, has very reliable hands and will go up and pluck the ball rather than letting it come into his body. I think he's a probably 15 to 20 area pick. Keep your eye on the New York Giants for him, possibly the Chicago Bears as well. As far as Purdue, Kawan Short, the defensive tackle, nose tackle, very strong senior season, helped himself in the offseason, played well at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, continued that with a good pro day workout, actually worked out in late March. I think he's a late first-round pick as well, probably between the 25 to 32 area for him. And Purdue has a couple other guys that will be selected mid-round. Cornerback Josh Johnson is a pretty good player. I would say he's a mid-round cornerback with some solid instincts and ball skills, and maybe a couple other guys. Believe it or not, their quarterback, Robert Marv, who really had a star-crossed injury-plagued career, started at Miami, came to Purdue, really was off and on starter his senior year. His stock has moved up through this postseason. I don't know. He's possibly a late draft pick. If not, teams will scurry to sign him as a priority free agent. And then IU probably has a couple guys priority free agent-wise. Defensive tackle Adam Replogle and fellow defensive tackle Larry Black, center Will Matty. Replogle is probably the best prospect. He's kind of an undersized guy. Lunch pail won't really stand out to teams, but once they get him in training camp, a very feisty, aggressive player with some short area quickness off the snap, and I think he'll push for making a roster someplace. I really think he's an underrated player. So that's kind of the skinny. We're less than 2 weeks away. And it's a real fascinating, interesting time. And the NFL has done a wonderful job of branding itself. So once the Super Bowl regular season's over, you immediately go into the scouting combine and then free agency and then the draft is upon us. So they're never really out of the news. And for football fans, I think that's a great thing.
Oh, absolutely. And we're joined now by Jeff Kurtz of Bear Closet and author of the new book, The Slant. It really gives you the breakdown on all the draft possibilities, and certainly like to consider Jeff one of our expert contributors here on The Balance. And I know you write a post and you maintain Bear Claws, which is all about the Chicago Bears. So obviously you guys have lost Urlacher, Logan Ryan to the Chicago Bears. Is that a reality?
That could be a possibility. I think that they'll go defense with that pick at 20, actually. In the best-case scenario, they would like to trade the pick and move down. They only have five draft choices because they gave up a pick for Brandon Marshall in the third round, so they don't have that selection. They also gave up a seventh-round pick to Tampa Bay for a defensive tackle who ended up not making the team last year, and Brian Price. So I think the Bears would like to move down. I'm not sure that anybody wants to move into that spot. If they do keep it, I think they'll be intrigued by a couple of defensive possibilities. I would throw out the name of Alec Ogletree, linebacker from Georgia, very talented player, maybe one of the most skilled and athletic players throughout the draft. His problem is he's had a litany of off-field issues. He had a DUI arrest about a week before the scouting combine, which wasn't a real good thing. He was also suspended for supposedly or allegedly failing a drug test at Georgia. So he's got some question marks around his character. But on the field, he's a guy that covers a lot of ground. He looks more like a athletic outside linebacker than somebody would play inside in terms of his frame and his build. But he's a possibility. I think that cornerback would also be something that would intrigue them if the right player was there. And it's a pretty deep class in terms of cornerbacks. We'll just have to see how the draft ball board falls. You know, Tom, once a guy is selected at a certain hot position, whether it's cornerback, quarterback, wide receiver, sometimes it starts a run on those players. So it'll be interesting to see. There's a couple possibilities that they could go.
Well, and those are some certainly interesting twists. I know Ryan may not have that imposing size, if you will, like Urlacher, and maybe they're not looking for a replacement on that, but you were mentioning some linebackers, and I tell you, one of the linebackers that came to my mind was Arthur Brown of Kansas State. How do you think he'll fit there at the Bears, or do you think they won't even look at him?
No, he actually made a pre-draft visit to Chicago a couple weeks ago. He's a guy that figures in that late first round, second round area. He has an interesting background. He originally committed and went down to Miami of Florida, didn't like it down there, came back home. He and his brother actually transferred from Miami back to Kansas State, very productive over his career. He's a little bit undersized in terms of his height, but he throws his body around. He's an aggressive tackler. He has good instincts. I think that Brown probably figures in that area anywhere between picks 20 to probably 45. So late first round, early second round as a possibility. He's a good football player.
Well, and I want to get into some of these other teams here, and also I want to make sure that everybody knows how to pick up your book. They can go to www.theslantdraftguide.com, correct?
Theslantdraftguide.com will take you there and has all the information. And like I said, the book's rolled off the presses yesterday. It was a labor of love. There were some few sleepless nights and some long days, but pretty proud of the final presentation. I think it's visually appealing, and I think it's got some good info in there as well. So best of both worlds.
I tell you what, I understand what it goes through to write a book, and I am writing a book myself, and I'm in the middle of it, so I don't want to give too much away about it, but I'm writing a book myself, and believe me, I know you end up staying up later at night than you ever intended on doing, and I never thought that it would be so labor-intensive, especially when you get into doing research and a lot of other stuff. But spend a few more minutes here on the Chicago Bears. I don't know. A lot of people look at the Bears, not just the Bears, the Colts, any team. We look at our offensive line, but we know that the defense wins championships. You got to draft defensively. But I look at Jay Cutler. I look at he's struggled with injuries. To me, maybe I'm just overthinking this, but an obvious smart pick might be an offensive lineman to help keep Cutler out of some trouble. And I think about Alabama's DJ Fulker, especially now that North Carolina's Jonathan Cooper is off the board. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's very observant of you, Tom. Offensive line has been an area the Bears have struggled with over the last decade, to be honest with you, and that's part of the struggles that Jay Cutler's faced as a quarterback. He's been on his back a lot, and when he hasn't, he's been harassed and under pressure. They did sign as a free agent left tackle Jermon Bushrod from the Saints, who should upgrade that position, and they signed a week ago Matt Slosson, a veteran guard from the New York Jets. So they've made a couple changes there. I think they're going to flip last year's left tackle, Jamarcus Webb, over to the right side, and he'll compete with a veteran that they brought in, Jonathan Scott, the former Pittsburgh Steelers, who did a pretty steady job. But they need an influx of young talent along the offensive line. So I think that they will be looking, the top tackles will be off the board, and Jokel, Eric Fisher of Central Michigan, as we mentioned, and also Lane Johnson, offensive tackle from Oklahoma. But DJ Fluker has the longest arms in the draft. He is a massive man, really best suited probably for the right side due to some limitations in athletic ability. His short area quickness isn't what you would really like at a left tackle spot where he's trying to face and protect the best pass rushers, but Fluker projects down around that 20 to 25 area. So I would not be stunned if that was a pick. He's a good football player. He's very experienced. He's durable. He graded out amongst the highest of all the Alabama offensive line players. So he's going to be a guy that will draw a lot of interest. Bears, Cincinnati Bengals also could be interested in his services as well. A real strong, a guy who's going to play probably the next decade, and you won't have to worry about it. And that's what you're looking for at the offensive line. Those guys won't draw a lot of attention to themselves, and that's what you hope, that they'll go kind of under the radar, but you just plug and play. And Fluker is one of those players.
Well, and then you also look at the Bears have also signed offensive tackle Jerome Bouchard and Jonathan Scott and Lance Lewis and, you know, just to name a few to help bolster their line. And, you know, I can see them waiting until day two or three for more line depth. Now, we talk about obvious picks, and we talked about this before when you've been on the show, is the replacement for Brian Urlacher. I think maybe the Bears and maybe other teams have drifted away from Teo. He's been in the spotlight. Maybe he's got all that worked out. I hope that he has. And I think a lot of teams would want an in-depth interview with him. I think more than anything, they just want to know, can he be trusted? And whoever ends up drafting him, I'm sure it's a certainty now that he's going to be drafted, maybe that coach just needs to have him get up and speak to the team private in a private meeting and let them know that he can be trusted, because I think that's a huge thing that the teams are looking at. Maybe that's why the Bears have drifted away from there. But how important is it to replace Brian Urlacher? Because in my opinion, you can't replace Brian Urlacher. You could just replace the position that he left there. So who do you think that might be?
Well, I think that they have a lot of needs at linebacker. Besides Brian Urlacher leaving, they also lost Nick Roach, who was a fixture at their strong side linebacker post. In a response to try to fill those needs, they did sign a pair of veterans, James Anderson, former Carolina Panther, who's a pretty good football player, a veteran. He had 20 tackles in a game against the Giants last year. They also signed DJ Williams, very talented Denver Bronco, former Denver Bronco player, who also had a couple character issues, was suspended a few games last year for allegedly taking steroids. He also had a DUI arrest, so he's got some black marks against him. So they did try to bring in some immediate proven veterans, but they don't have a lot of depth, and they don't have any young players at that position. So linebacker is definitely an area that they're going to try to target. Really, linebacker overall is not a strong area. There are probably better players on the outside than on the inside. It's pretty limited. But you're going to see day two, day three, second through probably the fifth, sixth round, the Bears try to target linebacker for at least a couple of those spots. They need depth, they need bodies, but they need people that they can groom to perform. The veterans they signed are really kind of a stopgap for the next year or two, and beyond that, they'll have to have some young talent emerge at that position. It's an area that they've really haven't focused on. It's coming back to bite them a little bit here.
Well, I know that we have a lot of Bears fans here, as well as Colts fans, but we have a lot of Bears fans on our network now, especially with Indiana Talks up in northern Indiana. We're literally from one part of the state to the other, so I know there's a lot of Bear fans up there. And you know, the Bears don't have a third round pick this year, obviously due to the Brandon Marshall trade. So they've got to really try to get a player while they can in the fourth round, and I'm thinking maybe Brandon McGee from Miami or somebody like that. I think McGee has good size, obviously 5'10", 193 pounds, and he's got a lot of speed. Does he fit into the infrastructure there at the Bears?
He could. I think he's a better fit probably in the scheme that Lovie Smith ran in the cover two. And the new defensive coordinator, Mel Tucker, who came over from Jacksonville, says he's going to run that same system and really not disrupt what they've been doing since it's been effective defensively. We'll have to see if that's more than lip service, if he's actually serious about that. McGee is a guy who's a very talented athlete, covers a lot of ground, was actually drafted as a professional baseball prospect a couple times and played on the Sun Devils. He's from Arizona State, played on their College World Series team. So he's been pulled in a couple different directions. He does have some injury problems. He missed his junior season, was sidelined the entire year, came back with a strong senior year effort. He's a mid-round guy. Another player that I really like, maybe even more than him, is a guy named A.J. Klein, inside linebacker from Iowa State. Probably doesn't fit the athletic mold that you look for, but in terms of production, in terms of aggressiveness, in terms of good instincts, he would be a solid player to groom in the middle. He does have some short area quickness. He's pretty skilled as far as taking on blockers and shedding them, which is something that Urlacher wasn't really adept at. His game was more that he covered a lot of ground. So keep an eye on the name of A.J. Klein from Iowa State. One other thought real quickly, Tom, on Manti Te'o, just to kind of wrap that up. I do think he'll be picked in the first round, late first round. He did make a visit to the Bears amongst a number of other teams. These guys kind of make the rounds. Some of it's a smokescreen, some of it's so that they can get players on their campus or facility to talk with them more in depth. I think he can play, and I do think he's refurbished his reputation. I'm not sure he'll be a Pro Bowler, but I think he'll be a guy that you can plug in for 8 to 10 years and be a real solid contributor. I do think the biggest challenge is probably once he goes to a team at the start of training camp, just fitting in and assimilating. We can all think back. We made a lot of dumb decisions and mistakes when we were in college too. His was just a lot more publicized. I don't know what the whole story is beyond that, whether the guy was that naive or whether he had a hand in it. Teams will wonder, can he play? And his teammates will wonder that. And if he gets past the first initial round of probably some hazing and kind of joking around and trying to get past that with his teammates, and they see on the field that he can help them win, then that's really all that matters.
And I absolutely agree. I think he has a lot to contribute on the field, and I'm anxious to see where he'll end up at. We're talking with Jeff Kurtz of Bear Closet and author of the new book, The Slant. Jeff, we got to take a break, but I do want you to stick around if you can, because I want you to help us with our mock draft, and I also want to talk with you a little bit toward the end of the show here about some AAA baseball. Can you stick around with us for a little bit?
Yeah, I'll hang.
All right. We're going to take a break, guys, right here on the Balance Radio Network, Indiana Talks. And so glad that you guys can join us all across the United States on Live 365. Tune in, iTunes Radio, and wherever it is that you might be listening to us. We'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network. Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan. The Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
My daddy left us. I was only 6 months older than you are now. I don't remember him. You will remember me.
Jackie Robinson, a black man in white baseball.
I want you to know I'm there for you.
In my heart.
Think about the abuse that he's going to take.
Your enemy will be out in force, but you cannot meet him on his own low ground.
What are you going to do if one of these pitchers throws through your head?
I'll duck.
Mark my words and circle this date. Negroes are going to run the white man straight out of baseball.
This ain't the America I know. You hear me?
If they knew you, they would be ashamed.
If Robinson can help us win, then he is going to play on this ball club.
You don't belong here, and you never will.
Get off the field.
Brooklyn Dodgers ain't changing our way of living.
Where are we down?
You are not the only one with something at stake here.
You want a player who doesn't have the guts to fight back?
No, I want a player who's got the guts not to fight back.
Give me a uniform. Give me a number on my back. I'll give you the guts.
I Brooklyn Dodger them. I Jack, I Rob, I Sin. Oh man, I'm Jackie Robinson. Except when I run base, I dodge the pen.
I'm just a ball player.
You a hero.
Why don't you look in the mirror? This is a white man's game.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm right here.
I'm a Brooklyn boy. I may take some getting used to.
Maybe tomorrow we'll all wear 42.
New 20!
Football, catch the fever.
The sport of kings.
And now let's talk some football. Minions, welcome back to The Balance. My name's Tom Marquisel, Presidente. I am your host. I will be with you for the next 30 minutes, and we're going to be we're talking with Jeff Kurtz of Bear Claws and author of The Slant. Going to be talking about the book that really breaks down a lot of the NFL draft prospects. We're putting together our mock draft, and while we've got Jeff Kurtz here to help us get that mock draft together, we're gonna take advantage of his expertise, that's for sure. So, Jeff, I appreciate you sticking around with us for this next half hour because we want to put together this mock draft. And really, I've got a few – obviously, there's a lot of possibilities out there, and I guess that's where I want to get your feedback at. But there, I want to kind of just maybe just go through the first five rounds, if you will, and just kind of give you my options of where I'm – a couple options that I'm looking at for each of these teams. You tell me which what might be a better fit, what might not be a better fit. Obviously, the number one pick for the 2013 draft is the Kansas City Chiefs. A lot of people will look at them drafting offensive tackle Luke Joeckel, I probably said that wrong, or Eric Fisher, offensive tackle from Central Michigan. There's also that, I'm sorry, his name escapes me from out there in Utah, that defensive tackle. But I think a lot of people look for Luke Joeckel to be from Texas A&M, offensive tackle, to be the number one pick overall.
It's Luke Joeckel, but you are close.
Sorry.
Yeah, I think, you know, and we're assuming that there's no trades, which always enters into it. I think Kansas City will probably end up keeping that pick, and I think they will go with Luke Joeckel. He's a shade above Eric Fisher, the offensive tackle from Central Michigan, but it's kind of like I like strawberry ice cream and you like vanilla or chocolate, as the case may be. It's that small of a difference. It's really, you know, what your personal preference is. Joeckel, pretty battle-tested, playing in the SEC, dependable, productive starter, good size, good athletic ability, his feet, he moves well. He's probably a better pass blocker than a run-drive blocker, but the way that the NFL's tilted to really a passing league, that's kind of what you want at that left tackle position. He's not without a few warts, like all of these players, in terms of inconsistency. He wasn't dominant every game like you would expect a top pick to be, but he has the potential to be a long-term starter, again, that you plug in and play, don't have to worry about, and develop into a consistent, probably all-pro or Pro Bowl candidate. So I would give him the edge, and I think that's the likely direction the Chiefs will go with that top overall selection.
And I think you're right. I think that seems to be the popular vote. Now we move on to the next pick. Obviously, the Jacksonville Jaguars. They need so much help. Where do we start? You could literally say they're gonna draft either a defensive person or an offensive person. But so I've kind of narrowed that down, and I just think that these guys are just a mess. And everywhere you look, from the ownership to the fans, the Jacksonville Jaguars are just a mess. And I don't know if in the future we see them moving out of Jacksonville, but for the moment they're the number two pick. They've got to get a quarterback in there. I think the only logical thing for them for a quarterback would be Geno Smith of West Virginia. Then on the other side of the line, on a defensive end, you look at Deion Jordan of Oregon. Either which way is the best fit. But let's get a leader out there. Let's start with a quarterback. I think Geno Smith would be the best option for that in my mock draft. What are your thoughts?
Well, you have a lot of good observations, and the franchise is kind of a mess. They've got a second-year owner in Shad Khan, who makes his money in the manufacturing business in Champaign, Illinois, actually. And he has a lot of enthusiasm and interest, but they really don't have a clear direction there. So they do have a lot of issues. And, yes, I do think that they'll eventually move out of Jacksonville and relocate to the West Coast, to Los Angeles, sometime over the next 5 to 10 years. As far as what they do on draft day, they have Blaine Gabbert. He's really proven to not be the answer at that position. So I agree with you that they'll take a quarterback. I'm not sure that they'll take one at the second spot in the draft where you've projected. I think that Deion Jordan, the hybrid defensive end outside linebacker from Oregon, would be a likely choice for them. I also wouldn't rule out a defensive tackle, Sharif Floyd from Florida. Either one of those, because they don't get a lot of push on the quarterback. And as you and I were talking earlier, defense is where you really win the championships at, and being able to stop the other team, and you've got to pressure the opposing quarterback. They haven't done that well for the last several years. So I think that a defensive lineman, keep your eye on either Jordan or Sharif Floyd, defensive tackle from Florida, in that spot. And then I think they'll come back with a quarterback in the second round, because they'll have the second pick in the second round.
Right, absolutely. But I'm interesting you brought up the Sharif Floyd. He's the only guy I got going in the next pick for the Raiders. I can't see anybody else making any more sense for them. So the Raiders go with Sharif Floyd. And I honestly, my opinion, I and maybe this is a little harsh, but I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are too stupid to figure out they need Sharif Floyd. So that just leaves Oakland wide open, and they're just going to pick him hands down. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think that Floyd, if he's not picked at two, will be a odds-on favorite to be the Raiders' selection. They just released Tommy Kelly, who was very productive, injury-prone for them earlier in the week, and then he was snapped up rather quickly by New England, I believe, but they need a replacement there and somebody who can rush the passer. Floyd is a guy who's just scratching his potential on how good he can be. Good size, high motor, very. He's a good pass rusher. He can take on blockers and shed them pretty quickly. So he's had a rough background, was actually raised in several homes as a youngster in the Philadelphia area. So it's going to be a blessing for him. Left school a year early, and I think he's probably ready to play at the next level and has all the size, all the skills, physical attributes you would want. It's just a matter of can he be consistent on a down-to-down basis. And Oakland's kind of in another rebuilding phase where they had to jettison a lot of veterans because of salary cap reasons. So they need a presence there in the middle. So I agree with you on that pick.
Well, and then as we move on down the road here in the fourth pick, and, you know, next week we'll really have our mock draft put together, and we'll kind of go through a full all the way through the best we can. But we just want to we're kind of limited on time, so just kind of want to give you a little teaser. And Ed Kratz is going to be joining us next week, I believe, to talk with us about the draft. And you're certainly more than welcome to come back on next week to do the full draft. But Ed Kratz comes on as the beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. And we were talking both off the mic and emails and texts and just different things and what he thinks. So I've kind of I don't want to say I've got an inside source, because whoever has an inside source unless you're actually in the war room. But the Philadelphia Eagles have got to do something. Obviously, that quarterback situation didn't pan out the way that they thought it was going to. So then you look at some of the other options that we've already talked about. And, again, I'm just throwing names out there. But from talking with Ed Kratz from Calkins Media, he tells me that if one of two of these guys are open, they're going to try their best to get them. And that's Geno Smith. Again, we talked about him with West Virginia. Jacksonville doesn't pick them up. And Luke, Joe Keckle, I'm going to mess that up all season. Of A&M. Those are really the two people that they're kind of centered in and focused at. And if they can, they really, really, really want Geno Smith of West Virginia. So Philadelphia there, one of those two names that we've already talked about, or any one of those a fit, if he's available, presuming.
I think Smith could be. They've spent a lot of time with him. He had a recent pro day workout mid-March after that session that was open to all scouts. He's had a private workout with Philadelphia. He's spoken with the Eagles and been to their facility since then. So they obviously have invested a lot of time and resources in scouting him and getting to know him. I like Smith. He was lights out the first half of the season when everything was going great for the Mountaineers. He displays, you know, he's mobile. He's got a good live arm. He made good decisions. And then the second half of the season, whatever the case might be, he just didn't play well. He made a lot of poor decisions with the ball. He did not play well in their bowl game loss to Syracuse in the Pinstripe Bowl. He's kind of a quiet, reserved young man, not the fiery, demonstrative leader that maybe you would want out of a quarterback, but all the skill sets are there. The new coach, Chip Kelly, coming from Oregon, you know he wants kind of that dual threat option at the QB position. And even though they kept Michael Vick, I don't think he's the feature there at all. So I think Smith could be a possibility. I would not be surprised to see that be their pick. They also need help on the offensive line. So one of the offensive tackles could make sense, whether it's Jokel, Lane Johnson of Oklahoma, or Eric Fisher of Central Michigan. And just one other name I'll throw out there. I would not be stunned either to see cornerback Dee Milliner from Alabama come off the board at that number four spot. They had some transition with their defensive secondary, and they're going to need some bodies there. He's a guy that's a top 10 pick, whether it's a fit in Philly or someplace down the line. That's going to be up to the teams in the draft board.
Right, and we must be on the same wavelength today. And honestly, I'm not just saying it. I'm looking at my names I've got written down here in my little mock draft here of the first five rounds. I look over at Detroit, and you mentioned Lane Johnson and Eric Fisher. Those are the only two names that I have for Detroit. They've got to draft an offensive tackle, and to me, those are the only two names that come to vision with me fitting in over the Lions if they're available.
Yeah, I think The other name that I would throw out would be, I think they need some help on the defensive line because they let Cliff Averill, defensive end, former Purdue Boilermaker, go in free agency. He had kind of a disappointing season last year, but Averill's gone. I would throw out the name of Ziggy Ansah, the defensive end who's raw but very athletic from BYU. Really only a one-year starter there, but highly productive. At the Senior Bowl, he struggled a little bit in practices, but when the lights went on, game time, he was the defensive MVP and really dominated that game. He's got an intriguing mix of size, athletic ability. He just needs to learn the nuances of the game and be a little become a little more experienced. But I think that that could be a possible pick as well. He's a guy that probably would have to sit and learn and contribute in a third down pass rushing situation and then be groomed more for the future. So Milliner or Ziggy Ansah could be something that the Lions would like. And offensive tackle, they have a hole there as well because Jeff Backus, the long-term left offensive tackle, retired after this season. So those are a couple different options for the Lions.
Well, and we'll be interesting to see how that pans out. Well, we don't have any more time to talk about the NFL draft, guys. Join us next week, and we'll have our mock draft up right before then, and we'll go through the mock draft of here at the Balance, and we'll have that next week. I want to thank everybody that's joining us on Indiana Talks this week live all over the state of Indiana. And by the way, speaking of Indiana Talks, if you're a hockey fan and you like the Indiana Ice, located here in Indianapolis, one thing that Indiana Talks does is they broadcast their games live. And tonight, the Indiana Ice will be against Waterloo. So if you're a big hockey fan, which I know a lot of our people, especially in the northern part of the state, are big hockey fans. Those in the southern part of the state, I know I grew up there, are like, what do I do with this stick? So anyway, depending on what part of the state you're on, if you're a hockey fan, tune in to Indiana Talks tonight, indianatalks.com. Check out the Indiana Ice versus Waterloo. Well, you know, here's a thing, and I don't know if you're aware of this. Maybe you are, but we've started a brand new show here on the Balance that broadcasts live here on the Balance Radio Network from 6 to 7 p.m. on Thursday nights, and then on we do an encore presentation. That very same show will rerun on Indiana Talks and Live 365 and some of our other national affiliates from 9 to 10 p.m. As well. We've started a new show called The Hot Corner. I love baseball. It's a huge passion of mine. Sports in general are a passion of mine, but just, you know, I was that kid growing up hanging out at the ballpark and just really a huge baseball fan. Obviously, no secret. Everybody knows I'm a huge Cardinals fan. But what we've started is a brand new show called The Hot Corner. You can catch us every Thursday night, and it's strictly dedicated to the MLB. But one of the things that we do a little bit different than a lot of other shows, anybody can come out there and talk about baseball, which we do, and we bring you the headlines. And obviously, you know, interesting thing, we had Mark Timmons of LA Dodger talk. We were talking about the Dodgers and about that San Diego Padres series, and we were talking about Minky and him being on the mound the first time out there at the park in San Diego, and the challenges that he was going to face. But never a million years did we predict that brawl, if you that bench-clearing brawl, which is going to put him out about 8 weeks for a broken collarbone. The San Diego player, I don't have my notes here because I wasn't going there today, but basically there you go. There you go. Thank you, sir. Charged the mound, suspended as well. And, you know, I don't know. I like Don Mattingly, obviously being from Evansville. I'm a Don Mattingly fan anyway. But he said it right in the interviews. This guy didn't know anything about baseball. Come on. We weren't even far enough in the game to warrant such an action. So I think that's kind of why the reason he got suspended. But one of the things that we do on the Hot Corner is that we talk a lot about the farm system. And And being located here in our backyard is the Indianapolis Indians, obviously the champions for the International League West in 2012. We cover a lot of those games. In fact, we were out there just last Sunday. Beautiful ballpark, in my opinion, one of the – and maybe I'm a little biased, but certainly one of the most beautiful ballparks in America. So each week, what we'll try to do here in the last few minutes of the show, if we've got time – we'll try to feature one of the minor league teams, and just as a teaser to what we're going to talk about over in the hot corner, because we do spend a lot of time talking in the AAA, all the AAA affiliates, and you can follow us on Twitter there on at 2HotCorner. The Indianapolis Indians kind of got a little bit of a slow start, obviously getting clipped by the Clippers in opening night there, Jeff, and I know you do a lot with the Indians as well. Had a moderately good series with Toledo, they're out in Columbus, had a bit of a delay because of rain, I believe. So talk with us about the Indianapolis Indians, some of the things that you've observed this year with the tribe.
Well, the Indians have had a very strong team over the last couple of seasons. They've kind of reshaped their roster this year. They've got an intriguing mix of some young pitchers in Gerrit Cole and Kyle McPherson, who are up-and-comers in the Pirates organization as prospects. McPherson actually got hammered and has not pitched well in his two starts this season, but Cole's been pretty solid, and big things are expected. They're amongst the top 10 prospects in Pittsburgh's farm system. To complement that, the Indians roster is comprised of a lot of veterans. Alex Presley is back in center field. He had a pretty long stay with Pittsburgh last year and played well. He's been injury prone, though, and for some reason he's never found the long-term fit there. So he's back in Indianapolis. He's off to a strong start this year. They also signed a couple of guys that you probably recognize from the major leagues. Brandon Inge, third baseman, former Detroit Tiger, is on a rehabilitation assignment in Indianapolis to start the season. They also signed former Cubs phenom, or alleged phenom, Felix B.A., who's off to kind of a slow start in Indianapolis. And they also have Ivan DeJesus Jr., who at one time was a highly regarded prospect. So I think that's what AAA is anymore. You see a couple of young, bright prospects who might have a future with the big league club, and you see the rest of the roster filled out with guys with major league experience or are hoping for another shot in the show. And whether it's due to injury or they've just been the odd man out, they're trying to kickstart their career. After that initial series with Columbus, Indianapolis has played well. They're in, as you mentioned, back over in Columbus after opening the season at Victory Field. Rained out the first night, played yesterday, and continuing a pretty long road trip. I think what I like is kind of the stability in the Indians organization. Their manager, Dean Traynor, is there for the third straight season, which is kind of unheard of in minor league baseball. Usually guys go from place to place pretty quickly, but Dean Traynor's been a rock there. He's always managed the team with kind of a no-nonsense, fundamental approach. Usually the Indians are pretty solid. They get better as the season goes on, which I think is a testament to him. They've got a veteran pitching coach and former major leaguer Tom Filer, and the Indians' pitching has been lights out. I think they led the league last year, and it would not surprise me if they're amongst the leaders at the end of this season. The unfortunate thing is they had such a good team last year. Starling Marte, who is tearing it up in Pittsburgh right now, was really the star of that team, along with some other highly regarded prospects. Those guys were all promoted as Pittsburgh found themselves in the unlikely position of being a contender late in the year. They promoted all those guys, so the Indians' roster in the postseason was really a shell of itself, and they were defeated in the first round of the playoffs. So it was kind of a disappointing end to what was a fun season. But I think they've got a pretty solid club again this year, and with that veteran leadership and the couple young pitchers on their staff, they should be in contention again. It's a beautiful ballpark. You're right, Tom. It's one of the gems in the minor league system. So should be another fun season as far as baseball at Victory Field.
Well, absolutely. And they're certainly – they were let's see here. When I was looking at today's schedule, I apologize. They're at Columbus today, 4:35 p.m., and obviously doing great jobs out there, Haig and Johnson. I wish we had time to really get into a lot more of that, but we don't, unfortunately, so it is what it is. We always like to take this time, give you some time to jump in the jungle. So, Mr. Jeff Kurtz, you're familiar with How the Jungle. 30 seconds, give us your rant, whatever it is.
Well, I'm not sure if it, folks heard, but Gunnar Keel submitted to Cincinnati, the former Columbus East star, number one quarterback in the nation, who originally committed to IU, then changed his mind, went to LSU, never actually enrolled there, went to Notre Dame. He's now found a landing spot, University of Cincinnati, with Tommy Tuberville. I hope that he's grown up and found a home. He's got excellent tools, but I think he's made some poor decisions. And it'll be interesting to see if his career takes off from here.
Jeff Kurtz of Bear Claws. Jeff, real quickly, where can people find your work and your masterpieces? And real quickly, how can they find your book?
Sure, The Slant Draft Guide, www.theslantdraftguidealtogether.com. You can find the information there. Also, bearsclawsfootball.com. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks. Jeff Kurtz of Bear Claws. Always, I enjoy having him on a lot. And he's one of my favorite guests, and we're going to really break down the NFL, and I cannot wait to download or get his guide, and I'm going to do that in my prep for the draft. And I wish we'd had some time to talk some IU football with him as well. Well, guys, that's going to do it for us today. We are out of here. Remember, don't drink and drive. It isn't cool. We'll see you next week. Well, this Thursday for the Hot Corner. Remember to follow us on all of our various different websites, IndyProSports.com, IndyMA.com, TheBalanceOnline.com, Two Hot Corner, T-Balance, and Pro Indy for Indy Pro Sports. And find us on Facebook. We're everywhere. Guys, we'll see you next week. Be safe. Don't drink and drive.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.